So as you can see today, I'm sitting in the chair, and occasionally I do this to sit in on a stool or a chair. And the idea behind it is that when we're exploring an issue, that I want it to be more of a discussion type of scenario or a conversation, as opposed to a stand-up, preach, passionate type message. I try and sit in the chair to calm myself down a little bit, to stop myself from getting too, you know, passionate about things. And then I reflected on last Sunday and I thought it probably didn't really work that well. I found myself getting really passionate. But I'm sitting in the chair again today on the stool because I'm trying to explore some ideas with you that are very much more conversational in nature. So what we're working through today, week four of what we call our More series, and what we've been working through over the last 3 weeks, is how we can experience more of God's presence in our life, especially how it relates to how we manage our money. And there's some really key biblical principles that we've been exploring over the last 3 weeks, and it will be again today, that help us to understand some of what God would want for us in terms of how we approach our money. But there's also a number of things that I'll be talking about which I guess are the practical outworkings of how I've applied these principles in my own life, and I know others have too. And so what the biblical fundamental truths remain the same, but the actual practical outworkings for them is something that you need to work out for yourself. I present some of my own story and that of some others as a model, as an example, but it's not presented in a way that suggests you must do this or you must do that or you must do that. But the biblical truths that we're exploring are ones that I want you to grab hold of and tease out and work out how do they apply to your life in your situation where you're at right at this particular point in time. Now, to give you a bit of an idea of where we've been over the last 3 weeks, because I know that not everyone's been with us over that time, I've got a table that's going to be up on the screen, which just sort of explains a bit more the More. So thanks, Wes. So week one, we explored what the Bible says about how we can go about lifting our level of income, how we can maximise our income. Then we talked in week two about what the Bible says about overcoming debt. That is, how do we reduce debt? How do we avoid getting into unhealthy and bad debt? And how do we pay off our debt really quickly so that we're not in bondage and slavery to the debt? We have ownership over it, not it owning us. Then last week we talked about rainy day reserves and retirement planning. Another way of saying that is savings. How do we save money? How do we go about it? And we explore what the Bible says about that. And then today we're talking about enabling generosity. And we're going to be exploring what the Bible says about how we can bless others generously by sowing into God's kingdom. Now, if you're with us for the first time today, then you can go to our website, gcofc.org.au, and you can catch up with the other messages in this series. They're already there, uploaded on the website. Now, what I want to do today is build a bit of a case, if you like. Build a bit of a case around an ancient tradition. A tradition that's been around almost as long as humanity itself. And I want to build the case that it's still an important practice that we should consider adopting for ourselves today. And what I'm talking about is giving away 10% of our income, or what's known in the Bible as the tithe. Now, I grew up in a church environment, and the church environment that I grew up placed a very, very high value on the tithe. In fact, it was such a high value that it was sort of basically considered a sin if you didn't tithe. If you didn't give away 10% of the church, it was like a sin. Or at the very least, anything less than the full tithe to the church was not God-honouring, and you were shortchanging God, and it wasn't a good thing. Now, today I want to challenge some of this assumption and some of this practice and belief. But first of all, to help us understand it, we need to go to some of the passages that from which this practice came from. And so one example is Malachi chapter 3, verse 8 to 10. It's going to be up on the screen. It says this: "Will a mere mortal rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how are we robbing you? And this is what God's saying, in tithes and offerings. You are under a curse, your whole nation, because you are robbing me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it. Now, to give a little bit of background to this passage, it was written for the Israelite nation. It's in the Old Testament, and it was written for the Israelite nation. It was the prophet Malachi reminding the Israelites of their obligations under God's law, which God gave to the Israelites when Moses was leading them, that they had to give 10% of their income away. And because they weren't doing it, because they were disobeying God's law, they were in fact robbing God. And they were robbing themselves of his provision and his blessing as a result. Now, the Israelites were God's chosen people. They were led out of slavery and captivity out of Egypt by Moses. And they were given this law. Moses went up onto Mount Sinai and was given the law. And they were given this law that they were to follow. Now, there were 613 laws in total. And one of those laws was that they had to tithe 10% of their crops, their animals that they had, or their income. And that 10% went towards funding the operations of the tabernacle and then the temple. And those that looked after it, the priests and the Levites, and also to help look after the poor. Now, what's really interesting is that often we look at the tithe and look at the Old Testament model of the tithe and think, well, that must have been, you know, like an obligation. It was difficult. It was a challenge and all that sort of stuff. Well, actually, for the Israelites, when they were first given the law, it was obedience to the law was just a response to God's grace. It was just the way in which they responded to God's love that brought them out of Egypt, that brought them out of slavery. Now, for those that have been brought up in church environments such as mine, we've quite rightly come to a point of questioning whether we still need to tithe today. Because we ask the question, we say, wasn't all that law stuff, all that Old Testament law stuff, dealt with at the cross? When Jesus stretched out his arms on the cross and died for you and for me, he fulfilled all the obligations of the law because he had lived the perfect life. And as a result of him fulfilling all the obligations of the law, we no longer need to sit under Old Testament law. Rather, we sit under his grace, under his forgiveness, under his redemption. And so aren't our practices different as a result? Don't we no longer need to be under Old Testament law? Wasn't it all dealt with at the cross? Quite rightly, we ask those questions. And so the question that comes that I want to try and get at today is, does God really still require us to give a whole 10% of our income? If you're a follower of Jesus today and you want to do your best to follow him and all that that means, does God still require us to give 10% of our income? Now, it's interesting as you look at various responses to this question, different people come to different conclusions. So some people, based on their understanding of the Bible, say, well, because of God's grace, because of what Jesus did on the cross, the question is, no, you don't have to give anything. You don't have to give a tithe, you don't have to give anything. Because we're under grace, we're not under law anymore, and we're free to do as we like. Now others, interestingly often pastors of large churches, have read the Bible and have come up with a very different conclusion. And that the answer to this question is still definitely yes. That the Bible does require us to give 10% of our income at least to the church. And if you're a follower of Jesus today, then that's part of your response to God's grace, is that you would just give 10%. That's the minimum. And it's more than that if you can, above and beyond, but the 10% is the minimum mark. Now, I suspect for many of us, we probably haven't really come to a point of answering this question for ourselves. I mean, life's pretty busy, it's pretty full on, and there's lots of bills to pay, the cost of living's pretty high, and we've just got to do our best, and if we can be generous, we will, and we hope that that's enough in the mix. So what I want to do now is explore what the Bible actually says about the tithe. Not just from the passage that we've read out already from Malachi, which was a passage that related directly to Old Testament law, but what it says outside of the law. And let's have a look as we do this at whether this practice of giving 10% is still in fact relevant to us today. So the first passage that I want to look at is in Genesis 14:20, and it's a story of Abraham giving a tithe to a priest called Melchizedek, the priest of the true God. And what we discover in this story is that the tithe actually predates Old Testament law. So it's not just confined to within the law of the Old Testament, because Abraham came much before Moses. And so here we have an example of the tithe being practiced in the Old Testament, but not within the confines of the law. So if you've made a decision not to tithe because it was Old Testament law and that no longer relates today, then you may need to reconsider your position. Because here we have an example of it sitting outside the law. Now, second biblical example I want to share is from Matthew 23:23, and this is where Jesus gives some instruction to some Jewish leaders in response to a question, and he says to them, yes, you should tithe. That's a good practice, do it. But don't forget the more important matters of justice, mercy and faithfulness. So Jesus actually commends the tithe. He affirms the tithe as a good practice in Matthew 23:23. Now, it's not a direct commandment. It's not Jesus, like he did elsewhere, saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart. It's not a direct commandment, but it is an affirmation. It is a commandment that the tithe is, in fact, a good practice. Let's have a look at the early church. Here we have, well, just like us, the early church, they're no longer constrained by the law. They're free in grace. They've experienced God's grace being poured out on them. They've found Jesus, belief in Jesus and hope in all that. And how did they respond? Well, they practiced extravagant generosity. The early church practiced above and beyond tithe giving, our third point. They had times when they went well and truly above the tithe. There's even examples in the book of Acts, such as Acts chapter 2, verse 44 to 45, where they gave 100% of all they had to help look after the poor that were in the church, to help fund the operations of the church. So as a response to God's grace, the early church, the early believers actually went at times above and beyond the 10% giving. Now, in the New Testament, as well as the stories of the early church that we have in Acts, we also have a lot of teachings in the form of letters that were written to help the early church and to also help churches throughout history, including our church, to practice what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? How do we do that well? And we've got all these letters which speak into that. And what's interesting is that we find the Apostle Paul, who's written many of these letters in the New Testament, actually commends and instructs the Corinthian church to practice regular and ongoing giving. Point four, the early church were taught the practice of regular and ongoing giving. In 1 Corinthians 16:2, Paul says to the Corinthian church, on the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. So what Paul was saying was that regular giving would help the church to function, both the Corinthian church and the other churches beyond that they could support. So I started today with a question. And the question was, do we as followers of Jesus still need to tithe? Do we still need to give 10% of our income? Now I am going to have a go at answering the question, but I believe that it's not as simple as yes or no. Because in deciding to tithe, in deciding to give 10% of our income away, we shouldn't do it because we have to. We do it because we're compelled to. If we decide to tithe, we shouldn't do it to receive God's blessing, but we do it as a response to His blessing on our lives. If we decide to tithe, it's not out of a mindset of works, but worship. So you could answer the question like this. No, you don't have to tithe. But if you choose not to, you are missing out on one of the most wonderful adventures of faith that you could go on. Now, I've been married to Kate for 15 years. We celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary at the start of this month. I cannot believe that I'm that old. It's ridiculous. For all of our married life, we've given away a percentage of our income, and as best as we've could, it's hovered around the 10%. Now, there's been times where it's been above 10%, where I can remember a season where we had no kids and double income, and there was just, you know, felt like, or it now feels like, that we had money everywhere, and anyway. And we gave away more than 10%. There's also times where it's been less than 10%, where we've been on a really low income, we've had dependents, had kids, and it's just to make by, we couldn't quite get to 10%, but it's always hovered around the 10%. It's either been close to it, it's been a bit other, or it's been right smack bang on the 10%. Now, there's been many, many times where we've looked at it and gone, oh, we just can't afford this. And we're even in one such a time right now. Now, yeah, it's not quite true, but let me explain what I'm trying to say. Over the last few weeks, I've been talking about this system of managing your money, and I'll get to a bit, and we'll review that in a little bit. And one of the things that we do is, as Kate and I try and save, we try and build up our savings so that we're paying off our house quicker, and we've got money in the bank so that if a rainy day comes along, we need to just access it, we can access it. And we've done all that, and so we've got a whole lot of savings there. So don't worry, we're more than okay. But one of the challenges that we've set ourselves is to live off 60% of our income. And it's at times really hard. And we're in a fortnight at the moment, just so happens to be a time that I'm speaking about this, where it is the most challenging time, I reckon it's the most challenging fortnight of the whole year, between pays, of us trying to manage on 60%. I'm not actually sure we're going to be able to do it. We're giving it a red hot go, and we might get to a few days out between next pay where we have to dip into savings, and if we have to do that, so be it, that's fine. But I guess we look at it and we could go, it would be very easy not to give the 10% this fortnight. It would be very easy just to sort of give 5 and keep 5 aside, and that would just help us get through the fortnight. We could still do our saving, we could do everything else. It would be easy, we could do all that, it would be fine. But the problem with that is that we've already given the 10% away. It's gone. It's the first fruits. The very first thing we do when the money comes in is that the 10% gets given away. And there's been many times when we've felt a bit like we've felt over this fortnight, that we can't afford this. But there's been many, many, many times more where God has shown us how faithful He is at providing for all of our needs. Now, I've got too many stories to tell here, other than to say, maybe not hundreds, but tens of stories, dozens of stories that I could share about God's supernatural provision over our lives, as God, we have looked to be wise in this area and looked to be generous in this area. God has been so faithful that we've always had enough, always, and more often than not, we've had abundance. Now, next week when I sum up, I'm going to share one of these stories. I don't have time to do it today. You can look forward to it next week. An amazing story of how God has blessed us in this space as we've sought to be obedient to Him. But what Kate and I have discovered after 15 years of marriage is some fundamental truths. And there's three I want to share today. The first one is that you can't outgive God. You just can't. Whatever you decide to be giving, to be generous, you just can't outgive God. He always gives more back. Now, it may not be more in terms of finances, but the sum of all that God gives, it's always more. You can't outgive God. The second truth that we've discovered is that it's not really for God that we give. It's for you. It's for us. We've benefited far more from practicing the discipline of giving over 15 years of marriage than I think God has. I mean, God's got enough. We're told in the book of Psalms that He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, and that's just probably an under-exaggeration. He has all the resources He needs. But the practice of giving has given us so much more in terms of our faith and what it means for us to be followers of Jesus. And the third spiritual truth is around this aspect, and that is that in giving you receive a greater gift than you could ever give. In giving you receive a greater gift than you could ever give. And that gift is God's joy. God's joy comes into your heart as you give. A sense of God's presence, of God's warmth, of His love, of His grace, it flows in your life. as we start to separate ourselves from some of what's in our wallet. Now, I believe that regardless of your level of income, a great starting point for your giving is this biblical model. Now, you don't have to do this. It's not a commandment, but it's a good model to follow, I believe, this giving of 10%. And there's a reason why God has put in place this model of 10%. And the reason is this, is that I think for most of us, 10% is just enough to hurt. 10% is sacrificial. 10% requires us to cut back in other areas. It forces us to be less consumeristic. It forces us to be less selfish. Now, if your giving is nowhere near 10% at the moment, then I want to suggest to you that you actually put in place a plan to get it up to 10%, because you're probably in a situation financially where you've got a whole lot of commitments and you need to meet those commitments, and to jump your giving from zero or whatever it is now up to 10% is going to mean that you can't meet those financial commitments that you've got in place. So it's going to take time. It's going to take a plan to put in place. And so maybe initially start with 2% or 2.5%, and then move it to 5%, and then step it up to 7.5%, and then step it up to 10%. But work towards it. It was a plan. It might take you a year. Might take you a few years. Might take you a few months. We're not under law here. It's not a sin if you're not giving 10%. But I think there is a clear biblical model that 10% giving is good for you. It's good for your faith. And it's good for those that you're giving to. So let's review this bucket system that I've been talking about over the last few weeks. And I'll talk a bit about how Kate and I distribute the money, the 10% that we give. So over the last few weeks, we've been talking about this bucket system, and the idea being that whatever we get paid, obviously it equates to 100%. And the suggestion is that you could put in place something like this. And so the bucket system, effectively, each bucket represents a different bank account. So you go to your bank, you say, I want 5 accounts in my savings account. If your bank wants to charge you a whole lot of fees to do that, tell them there's plenty of banks out there that won't charge me fees, and I'll go and do it with them, unless you agree to do this now. Make sure you don't get charged fees on it. But once you put that in place, what happens? You've got a daily bucket there, and all your income gets paid in your daily bucket. And then what you do is you distribute across the rest of the buckets out of the daily, once the money's gone through, percentages into those buckets. And so there's the smile bucket. This is not my idea, by the way. This is based on a book by Scott Pape called The Barefoot Investor. It's a fantastic book. This is my modified version of what Pape recommends. He's a regular columnist in the Herald Sun. So anyway, 60% in daily. Pape and I both suggest that you put 10% into Smile. Now, Smile is a short-term savings bucket. It's for anything that's going to put a smile on your face. A holiday, for example, or something you want to buy for the home, or a new toy, or whatever it is. You know, it's that thing that puts, the thinking about it puts a smile on your face. Put 10% into that bucket. Splurge is just those things that you just like, you know, your coffees or your glass of wine or your little treats here and there, little things that you just want to treat yourself with, and you just want to splurge, and maybe you want to, you're out with have it with friends, having a coffee at a cafe and a cake, and you've got some money and you splurge, you can just go, I've got this, and you just pay for it and you're done, and you shout everyone their coffee and it's really good and nice. And so that's what splurge is, and I suggest putting 5% of your income aside into splurge. There's the mojo, which is 15%, I'm suggesting, and 15% is, that's like your fire extinguisher, or it's getting your financial mojo back. Pape calls it his mojo. And so the idea being is that 15% of your income gets put aside, and depending on what stage of life you're at in a financial sense will determine where that goes to. So if you're high up in terms of credit card debt and you're not able to meet your monthly repayment or your maximum repayment, and you're paying interest on credit cards, or you've got higher purchase that you're paying interest on, or whatever those things, then that 15% gets rid of that debt. That's the first priority. Deal with that, get rid of that completely. Now, if you're not in your own home, once you've paid off all your high interest debt, if you're not in your own home, then the 15% goes towards saving up for a deposit in a house. Now, once you're in your own home, it pays off your loan. Above and beyond your minimum monthly repayment, which comes out of your daily, the 15% gets rid of all of that. And then if you paid off your home, it goes towards savings for retirement, so that it comes a stage where you no longer are able to work, or you're just in a position where you want to cut back and enjoy life and do other things. Maybe you even just want to continue working, but you don't want to have to draw income out of the organisation that you're working for. Whatever it is, that 15% is going to allow you to be comfortable at that stage of your life. Now, 10% goes to give. Now, interestingly, this is the big difference between myself and Pape. Pape doesn't actually talk about giving, and so his percentages across those previous three buckets are somewhat different. But I think that a really good idea is to be trying to give away 10% of our income for all the reasons that I've just talked about today. So for Kate and I, we have a 10% bucket or bank account. And 10% of our income, as soon as it's paid, goes straight into that bucket. And then once it's in that bucket, it gets distributed. And it gets distributed across three different ways. The first way it gets distributed is our giving to the church. And so a significant portion of our bucket, not quite all of it, but a significant portion, close to the, or definitely the majority, of our bucket gets distributed to the church. We believe, Kate and I believe, that the local church is the hope of the world, to quote Bill Hybels. And we think that there's nothing more powerful than the local church coming together, following Jesus as an example to the rest of the world of coming in under his grace and finding freedom, finding forgiveness and hope. The local church is the hope of the world. So wherever we are worshipping at, and at this stage it happens to be this church, the majority of our 10% gets given to the local church for those reasons. We hold some of it back, and that goes to support some missionaries. We've got some friends that are working in Thailand in the slums of Bangkok. And we just love what they're doing. They're church planting there, and they're doing amazing things. And so we give a monthly amount to them to help support the work that they're doing. So it's not just about the work of God's kingdom here in Gisborne. That's got an international, global focus to our giving as well. And then we hold a little bit more back. So the majority goes to the church, a little bit goes to supporting missionaries in Thailand, and we hold some back, and we call that our blessing fund. And this gives us the opportunity. If we see a need, we can just go, we'll look after that. Sometimes we let that amount accumulate over time, and then it grows into something a bit bigger. And again, it just gives us that opportunity to bless someone, just to be able to say, you know that they're in need. You know that there's the situation there that's really difficult for them, and you know that a financial gift is going to make a difference, and you can say, here you go, God loves you. That's how Kate and I do it. As I said earlier, the example that I use and that I've just shared is how Kate and I have worked out what the biblical truths mean for us. You may come up with a different model, and that's actually okay. I'm giving this as a model and an example of how you can interpret it. But what I really want you to do is to take on board the biblical truth and work out, what does this actually mean for me today, right now? First week of this More series, I started by quoting one of my favourite passages of the Bible, and it's a great passage that speaks into this area of financial stewardship. It's from Matthew 6:21, and it says this: where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. See, giving 10% helps put our hearts where they should be. Or saying it another way, giving 10% connects our hearts with God's heart. Now, there's all sorts of statistics out there on giving and giving to charities and giving to church and all that sort of stuff. And I've got a couple of statistics that I want to share with you, but I do say with some trepidation because I know that statistics can be used to build any case you like for one way or the other. But I'm just sharing a couple of statistics now to highlight how we as a church are actually going okay in this space, but how there may well be some room for improvement. So let's have a look. So the statistics tell us that the average Christian, the average sort of serious follower of Jesus, someone that's looking to follow Jesus, to adopt his teachings, to live under his grace, forgiveness, all that sort of stuff, the average follower of Jesus gives 2% of their income away to churches and charities and so on. That's what the stats reveal. Now, as we look at the giving to this church and we look at the number of households represented that come to this church, we're actually above average. We're doing a lot better than the 2%. Now, it's hard to get a really accurate figure without me actually asking you exactly what your income is and asking you exactly how much you give to the church. I can't get an accurate figure. Now, I want you to know that I don't know who gives what. And I've deliberately chosen that to be the case. I don't want to know. Because it clouds things. It makes things difficult and all of that sort of stuff. And I just want to treat everyone equally in this church without having that knowledge in the back of my mind around who's giving what and who's not. So I wouldn't have a clue what you give, and I don't ever want to know. And if someone starts telling me what, I'll just say, don't want to know. But if you take the average wage, the average household wage in the Macedon Ranges, and you work out, well, we've got so many households represented attending our church, then it would appear, based on what our actual giving is, that we're sitting at somewhere around the 4%. That 4% of our household income has been given to this church, which is double the average, which, when you think about it, is actually really pretty good. So we're shooting above the average, but we're also shooting a lot below the biblical model of 10%. Now, I shared earlier how giving can be a great faith adventure, and I'll be sharing more next week about how God has blessed me and Kate in this space incredibly. But I just want to encourage you today, as we wrap it up, to give it a go. That wherever your giving is at the moment, and if it's not at 10%, to look to increase it. Now, if that giving increase happens to come to our church, well, we're not going to say no to that. We're going to say thank you very much. That would be really wonderful, because that would help bless us to bless others. But my concern today is not so much where the giving is directed to. It's more about encouraging you and challenging you to go on an adventure of faith. To look at how you might increase your giving so that you actually have to look for God and go, I'm not sure how this is going to work, God, but somewhere along the way you're going to have to provide for me. One of the names given to God in the Old Testament is Jehovah Jireh. And it means the Lord who provides all we need. So my challenge to you today is that if your giving is currently under 10%, then consider looking to increasing it. To go on that journey of faith so you can discover, maybe for the first time, or maybe afresh, the great Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides all we need.